Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Caroline Gilby. How are you, Caroline?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. We're going to be talking about Cyprus. We're in Vintners Hall in London. I've just tasted a load of Cypriot wines. You can tell I've had a load of wine. And last week we were talking about the white wines and a little bit about the climate. And we finished up talking about disease pressure in Cyprus, saying there's not much disease pressure. It's all pretty good. Except for one of the reds we talked about, you said that the guy had to do something like 40 hours of sorting for every ton of grapes. Now, if that's not a problem with your vines, there's got 40 hours per ton.
Yeah.
You know, that's like choosing individual grapes, put them up to the microscope and then moving on to the next one.
Well, not far off really, but the problem with that grape variety, Marathefticho, is it suffers from a physiological condition called hen and chickens, where you get some berries that expand and change colour and get ripe, and some that just stay small and green. And if you don't separate those out, you end up with harsh green tannins.
I always get confused between... I like the term hen and chicken because it makes sense to me. But the French use Melange and is it Collier?
Collier, yes. Collier or Chateau, as the New World has called it, is when some of the berries don't form at all. And actually, in some ways, that's easier to deal with than Melange, which is the hen and chicken thing, where you get these small green berries that you have to sort out.
Which is the one I thought was Collier with a... fall off or...
Yeah, so they're not there at all, so you don't have to... So with Collier, you end up with low yields because some of the berries just haven't formed and you get these loose bunches with gaps.
Yeah.
But you don't... At least you don't have to pick out the small, hard green berries because they've fallen off.
Some people reckon that hen and chicken isn't that bad because you get grapes with a lot of skin contact and no juice. I've heard people think, oh, hen and chicken is actually quite good because you get a little bit more tannins, a little bit more colour, things like that.
Well, not really in reds anyway, because they tend not to ripen at all. So they're very green and green tannins are nasty. I think it's less of a problem maybe in some white varieties where the small berries give you a bit of freshness and a different dimension. But in reds, generally, it's not an appealing characteristic.
The grape we're talking about is Marathefticho, but it's actually got another name as well. Not going to tell you. Do you know the name of it?
Well, one of its other names is Vanvacarda, which is used particularly around the area of Pitsilia, high up in the mountains. Yeah.
Why do they call it that? Is it just?
Well, it's just the traditional name for that grape in that region. One of the producers there is very keen to keep that tradition going.
I tried a reasonable range of them downstairs. My gut feel with Marathefticho was that it wasn't particularly high in acids, but it had reasonable acidity, reasonably high tannins. And many of the wines I tried were pretty unoaked, and some of them were just a little bit hollow in the mid palate, but their alcohols were quite high, which sort of didn't quite make sense to me because, you know, if you've got loads of acidity, you can expect that to rob weight from the wine. But if you've got loads of alcohol, that gives weight to a wine. So I couldn't quite understand what was going on with the wines. Is that... If I misinterpreted the wines or...
Well, I think the thing with Marathefticho is it's work in progress and I think you're going to see very rapid developments and improvements in the wine because traditionally it's grown in mixed plantings because, first of all, it needs a cross-pollinator, so you have to grow it with something else that flowers at the same time.
Oh, yeah, you were saying that.
And it's also traditionally grown mixed in with the Mavro to give it the Mavro to give it more substance and colour and so on. So that means that actually single vineyards of Marathefticho are very rare. They're starting to happen, but, you know, that people have to have those single vineyard plantings to kind of understand how to manage it, how to control the yields properly, because what you would sometimes get is a bush that had 20 bunches on it next to a bush that had 2 bunches on it. So a lot of differences in yield, lack of concentration on one and maybe too much concentration on the next one. Mm. So I think we're going to see a lot of development in understanding of how to really improve it, to bring the fruit forward and to maybe polymerize the tannins a little bit too. Because I think what happens is maybe the tannins are quite robust and maybe hide some of the fruit that's there a little bit.
Tannins do hide fruit quite nicely. Mm. Although I didn't... It's not like some of the Greek wines where or Italian wines where it's just your mouth feels butchered afterwards, you know, you feel abused in your mouth because of the intensity of the tannins. You know, they were firm tannins, but they didn't feel astringent. They didn't, you know, the tannins were nice.
Yes, they are nice tannins, and with Cypriot food, they really, you know, they disappear and it all comes into its own and makes sense. But yeah, they're not hard like Tsino Mavro from Greece can be, or Nebbiolo on a bad day.
No, don't talk to me about Nebbiolo. I know everybody in the wine trade is supposed to love it, but I find it a tough cookie to hack. I found one of the wines, not the ones we tried here, but is it Tizakakis?
Chakas,
Tizakakis. Yes. His Marathiftico had a load of oak in it. It was proper Aussie here. Look at me, I've got lots of oak type of style of wine. You didn't show that. It would have been quite a crowd pleaser though.
Mm. Yeah, well, I could only choose a limited number of wines, and there were a couple of other things I wanted to show from that producer, from Chakas. I mean, it would have been nice to show that a different dimension and a different place. But, you know, you can't show everything in a masterclass.
Yeah, no, that makes sense as well. You've got to have a good bit of variety. I did try a range of Shirazes and Cabernets downstairs. Wasn't particularly impressed with them, I must admit. I know I probably shouldn't say that, being a bit mean and nasty, but they didn't really have any nice varietal characteristics. I thought they were all just a little bit probably overripe a little bit. I don't know. What's your impression of them?
Well, for me, I think the Shirazes and the Mediterranean grapes do better than the Cabernets. Cabernets, I think, can sometimes be, in spite of the ripeness, you get this odd thing where you get high alcohols, but the tannins aren't really ripe because the vines have got a bit stressed because it's dry. And so it's harder making good Bordeaux grape varieties in Cypriot conditions. I think Shiraz does better. Again, you've got to watch a little bit about quite how high the alcohol gets. And I think possibly you've been a bit hard on some of the Shirazes, but I don't think it's going to be what sets the outside world on fire. I think they can do well selling on Cyprus, the better ones anyway. But there's so much good Shiraz in the world. The way Cyprus is going to get on people's shelves is by offering people something different, not another Shiraz from another warm country.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair call. I made a note of that, actually. I thought it was physiological ripeness as well. That wasn't quite right. It was shut down, you know. That was my gut feel about the wines.
So, I mean, plantings of both Cabernets have dropped, whereas Shirazes and Marathiftico are both on the increase. So I think as a recognition that Cabernet is quite challenging in Cyprus.
You gave us a relatively new grape variety, Yannanoudis.
Mm-hmm. Yannoudi.
Yannoudi. Yep. That's not Yanni who's running around streaking, all right? Just to be clear.
No, but it is named after a guy called Yanni in whose garden it was found.
He wasn't a naturalist, was he?
I have no idea, but this vine was found in, you know, John's garden, so hence the name Yannis Yannoudi, Little John's grape.
Oh, well.
Little grape, something like that.
Are you sure he's not a nudist? It does sound even more
maybe.
Like it.
Ooh, hadn't thought about it like that, and I'm not sure I want to.
Well, next time you meet the fellow, just give him a...
Yeah.
But that was an interesting wine. You said it was it's a relatively new grape variety. Well, you weren't quite sure if it was really new or really old.
I think nobody knows. It was found in the garden of this guy back in about 93, 94, and people have sort of seen some potential in the style of wine it produces, and it's starting to... Well, the first commercial production, really, 2013. So it's a new kid on the block, but nobody really knows whether it's an accidental crossing that just happened to grow, or whether it's a very old grape variety that had pretty much been forgotten about.
Yeah,
nobody knows yet, and until they do DNA, they probably won't know.
And even if they do DNA, they'll never be 100% sure. Although, if it's from grape varieties that aren't really grown on the island before. Now they'll know, but
yeah, they'll get some idea of its parentage and its relationships. But yeah, whether there's any kind of paperwork, I very much doubt.
Yeah, I suppose we can get to it. What do you think about this Yanni Nudi?
Yeah, well, I think it's very promising. I mean, I like the style of the fruit, and it has more refined, more elegant tannins than Marathefetico. And, you know, it's early days yet, but I like the flavours and I like the style of the wine. Mm. So, and it's already, even in early vintages, you know, Chakas 2013 got a silver medal at Decanter this year, which is, you know, 91, 92 points, which for something that's so new on the block is pretty creditable.
Yeah, no, and the two examples you gave me were decent wines. Mm. You know, they were quite enjoyable wines. I didn't taste them downstairs because... I was only looking for things that I thought were really classic Cypriot wine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, well, it can't be classic when it's so new and there's so little of it. But I think we'll see more of it because I think a few winemakers are interested in it because it naturally has lower alcohol than some of the other grape varieties, especially the international ones. And, you know, so its potential for blending and, you know, adding some balance to some of the grape varieties that are inclined to be a little hot might be quite nice as well.
Yeah, yeah. You do struggle. Or not. I didn't find the alcohols in the wines I tasted too over the top. There was nothing that I was like, this is out of balance.
Well, they usually keep quite good acidity at the same time, which means they can carry the alcohol. So, you know, alcohol, high alcohol per se is not necessarily bad, provided the wine's in balance. I mean, look at Amarone, you know, it can be fantastic and balanced at 16.5%.
Yeah, no, you can get some nice balanced wines.
You have to look at the whole wine, really, rather than one component.
Yeah, no, fair enough too. And we were talking, well, you're saying that historically Cypriot wines, there was a lot of bulk wine production, mm-hmm. And that was dominated by just a small number of producers.
Yeah, there were, in not that many years ago, the big four that really were huge producers and dominated. I mean, you know, 25 years ago, Keo was crushing sort of 30,000 tons a year. Now it's more like 2,500 to 3,000 tons. So it's a very different size of industry now to what it was in the past.
And what was the motivation for the change?
Well, I think there was starting to be a change anyway, because small producers, quality focused producers, were starting to have ideas about wanting to do their own thing anyway. But then there was a big motivation for change in 2004 when Cyprus joined the EU, and that meant any subsidies on exports within the EU became illegal. And a lot of that bulk business had been subsidised quite heavily by the Cyprus government. So that all went, and without subsidies, you know, it's not cheap viticulture in Cyprus because it's mountain viticulture and with the complexities of land fragmentation and so on, suddenly became uneconomic. So that was another real kick up the backside of producers who'd started to think about, we've got to move our ways of doing things. Yeah, big push from that.
I saw some of the new vineyards planted up in the hills. They did look like they've been terraced, though. Almost like, I think, I can never remember, is it Sulcalcos they use in Portugal, where they have roads and you can drive off onto terraced vineyards?
Right. Oh, well, it's a long time since I've been to Portugal, so you're probably more up on it than I am.
I can't remember. Yeah. It's Vina Alta, I mean, Alto and Sir Carcos.
Yeah, some of the vineyards are so steep that you've got to terrace to...
Yeah. A couple of the pictures remind... Not that I've been to the Douro, but a couple of the pictures remind me of pictures of the Douro in terms of, you know, the... It was quite an arid-looking climate and steep.
Dry, steep, yeah, lots of limestone and chalk in the soils, or shale in some places, but always dry and well-drained.
Yeah. What's the exciting future from your point of view for Cypriot wines?
Well, I think the exciting future is that they've got interesting and different grape varieties. And, you know, the thing about wine is people are always... If they're interested in wine, they always want to explore and see what's different. And wine is a great lens for kind of seeing a place, because it brings together the landscape and the culture and the people that have shaped it. So I think that's really important. One of the issues I think Cyprus might have is pricing, because consumers have to feel that they're paying a fair price for what they're getting. And having quite a strong tourist market means pricing is not always... I wouldn't say it was a cheap place to go and buy wine, but there's some good... There really is some good wine there. And it's such an exciting place to follow because, you know, it's undergoing a complete revolution. Every time you go, there's new wine, new producer. There are new things bubbling under, new grape varieties like Primara, Moroccanella, Aspruddi that, you know... It's a buzzing scene and there's more to come.
Okay. And in the UK, obviously, because we're a UK wine show, any Cypriot wines that you can currently buy in the UK that you'd recommend?
Yep, you can buy several from Berry Brothers and Rudd or BBR.com. Do the wines from Zambartus, so nice rosés, Marathéftico, Lefkada Shiraz. Then you can also buy wines from Kippurunda in the UK. Petritus is brought in by Hallgarten. Berry Brothers and Rudd, again, bring in Commanderia from them. Then Marks and Spencer's now have a new Marathéftico, which has just gone into stores, and that's from Sodap. And then there are one or two specialist importers as well for wines of Kehoe and a few other people. So you'd have to do an internet search for those ones.
So Marks and Spax, if you want the high street star.
And Berry Brothers and Rudd would be the leading place to go to as a consumer.
Lovely.
Go and have a hunt on their website.
I did actually before I came in. Excellent. All right then, Caroline, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you.